Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. Full EV or plug-in hybrid? Go electric with Kia. For more, log on to kia.com.
And Joe at RT.ie and 51551, wash your hands, is the ongoing text number. Marie, good afternoon.
Hi, how are you, Joe?
Good. This happened 6 days ago. And it's, yeah, it's back. It's a topic that's been on Liveline now since the pandemic began, almost, because of the rules and regulations brought in by our maternity hospital. Now, they've been different than some maternity hospitals, in fairness, but the main maternity hospitals in the capital, at least. What happened, Marie? Can you tell me?
Well, I had I contacted Minister Donnelly last week and asked him about seeing if fathers could go to scans and stuff like that. And just the response I got was just very cold and automated. It was just, we acknowledge receipt of your email, and that was it. Then maybe a week later, this happened 2 weeks ago, maybe a week later, I had symptoms of what was going to be a miscarriage.
Okay.
And I contacted my doctor, I went to my doctor, and they booked a scan for me on the Friday.
Mm.
On the Wednesday, I started kind of panicking, and I went to A&E.
Okay.
And was waiting there for 5 hours, and eventually got in, and I couldn't bring my partner. So they did a few procedures on me and then came back to me and told me I just have to come in for the scan on Friday. There's nothing they can do now. So I went in to the scan on Friday, and I begged. Basically what happened beforehand was I went to bed Thursday night, and it just all happened. The cramps started, and basically I miscarried my child on Thursday night.
Sorry to hear that. And Marie, by the way, when you wrote to Stephen Donnelly, as a citizen almost, raising this issue, which a lot of women have and men have raised the issue through this programme, and I see it's like the disability issue, which was on Liveline 5 months ago non-stop. It was raised at last in the Dáil yesterday, the way people with disabilities and special needs were being treated during the pandemic. But you wrote to Stephen Donnelly, the Minister of Health, before this affected you.
Yeah.
And before you knew it would affect you.
Yeah, because I was so scared that on the 12-week scan that they weren't going to find a heartbeat, or there'd be a fetal abnormality or something like that. So that's why I did it. I was nervous about the scan for 12 weeks. And it was just my first pregnancy, and, you know, everything was, I just kind of wanted to just basically, hopefully something will change, please God. But
so you went to A&E on Wednesday. They said go for the scan on Friday. Thursday night, unfortunately, you miscarried. And what happened on Friday then?
On Friday, we went, myself and my husband went to, we went up to the hospital, and I begged the security to let him in. I said, please let him in. They said, no, our hands are tied. You can't get him in. So I had to go up to the scan on my own. I was waiting there for about half an hour. And when I went in, they just, as soon as they put the scan on me, they knew. And they told me straight away, and I just started bawling. And I had to, they said that you can have a few minutes with your, because I was bleeding so heavily, they said that it would be advisable to stay in. So I, I had to contact my husband and ring him up and said that I'm after miscarrying, and would you mind coming up? We can have a few minutes together now.
Okay.
So we had a few minutes together, and then he had to leave.
But the only reason, the only reason your husband was allowed up, Marie, was that, unbeknownst to you, you suspected a miscarriage, that was confirmed, but unbeknownst to you and him before, they were keeping you in. So you said, well, my husband didn't know I'm going to be kept in. Can you please let him up to say goodbye, and I'll give him a list of things I need or whatever?
Yeah.
So they did let him up for a few minutes.
They let him up for a few minutes, like, and even though I knew, like, Like, why couldn't he have come up into the scan? Do you know what I mean? Like, if he washed his hands, if he put on a face mask, if he has it, I have it. We're together the whole time. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's just so unfair that he wasn't allowed up to the scan. Just doesn't make any sense. Like, he's the father. Like, he's as much involved in this baby's life as I am. Do you know?
Yeah.
So it's just, anyway.
And how long were you kept in hospital for, Marie?
How
long
days.
Did you have to stay? 2 days. And did your husband get up to see you in the meantime? Anybody get in to see you in the meantime?
No, nobody could go in and see me. My husband brought in stuff for me later on that day, and I asked the nurse, would she mind if he came up for a little while? Just, you know, because I had my own room. Like, there was nobody else in my room, so I asked her if she could let him in for a wee while, and she said, no, unfortunately, we can't. So, the security, she had to go down and just get my bag for me and bring it up.
Now, you've done some research, and the question has to be asked, why is this such an immovable object during the pandemic in terms of flexibility? But you did some, and a number of people have said, look at the way women have been treated generally over the years in Ireland. But anyway, you've discovered stats about miscarriages in Ireland.
Yeah, there's 14,000 miscarriages in Ireland a year.
Wow. That's over 1,000 a month.
1,000 a month, and people are going through this so lonely, like, they have to do it on their own. Go to these scans on their own and find out. Like, it's just so cruel.
And then, I presume, during COVID, in terms of people consoling you and your friends, siblings, mother, hugging you, say, listen.
What I normally do to try and make myself feel better is go to the gym, try and do some cast at the gym and socialise with other girls and stuff like that. I can't do that at the minute. Like, all your crutches are gone to try and make yourself feel better.
And by the way, Marie, what was it like those 2 nights and 2 days, long days and long nights in the hospital? In the maternity hospital?
I was just bawling. I just kept crying the whole time. And I was very close to the labour ward, so I could hear babies crying at night. And it was just very, very, very tough. I was just talking to my family at home. They were very, very good. They were ringing me the whole time and seeing that I was okay. And but you're basically on your own, the nurses are very good. Like, they try and talk to you and try and console you and stuff as much as they can.
Stay with us, Marie, because I want you to listen to Ruth. Ruth, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for contacting. What was your experience, Ruth, during the pandemic?
I don't know where to start, Joe, to be honest with you.
Say hello to Marie and Marie to Ruth, because you're
Hi, Marie, how are you?
And COVID
sorry
world.
To hear of your loss. I went through kind of similar. Mine happened in May during the lockdown.
I'm so sorry as well.
What happened with me was I was 3 months and I had been high risk because I previously had a miscarriage 2 years ago. But because of the lockdown, I wasn't able to get any scans. And unfortunately, I had bleeding. And I had to go into A&E. And my experience was just, it just wasn't a good experience. Now, I don't want to put down the doctors and the nurses because they did their best.
And people understand that, Ruth, don't worry.
So basically, when I went into A&E, I was put in a room. It was a little room for anyone that had problems with their eyes, because the room wasn't available for the gynae. I was put on a chair, and I didn't have anyone to help me. The nurses were busy. They weren't able to come in and check on me. And in the interim, there was a lady beside me in that other room giving birth, and I could hear everything that was going on. Obviously, she was losing a baby too. The problem for me was I wasn't allowed to bring my partner, and I had to use the toilet several times because I was having serious amounts of blood loss. And I was in and out of the toilet, and I started to get weak, and at one stage I was in the toilet and I had to call for a nurse because I actually thought I had passed the baby. Okay. And I was then put back into the room, sitting on a chair, left on my own, waiting to get into the other room so I could be seen. Mm-hmm. And just very, very, very distressful time, because if my partner had been allowed in, he could have been able to bring me to the toilet.
Yeah.
I also had no change of clothes. I was in absolute agony. I was in severe pain. So, you know, my kind of cries for help as well weren't being heard, because you're in A&E, it's busy, they're all busy with everybody.
Yeah.
And I remember a poor old woman quite close to me calling for water. Now, I'm still left with her calls for water, water, please, someone get me water. Joe, if I had the energy and the strength to get the poor woman water, I would have got her water.
Yeah.
But like, when people aren't allowed in to their with their family, these things can happen, that you can be left. You know.
Yeah, I know.
You can't be given the things that you might be given if there was somebody there. Anyway, cut a long story short, I finally got into the room, and things started to progress for me. I was having contractions, terrible pain, terrible blood loss. The doctors came and saw me, and they did an exam, and they said they'd come back. They left, and I was on my own in the room, and then I had severe loss of blood clots.
Wow.
And I had to call for a nurse, and my calls were kind of left, and finally a nurse came to me, and I just said to her, what have I to do to get help here? There was blood everywhere, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
I said, I need help, please, I need help. I'm going to die in here, because I was just left on my own. And I sent my partner a text message, and I told him what was happening, and I actually sent photos to my brother. I said, I'm going to die in here.
Okay.
I'm actually going to die in here. It was all dealt with, Joe, but finally I was able to bring my husband in. He's now my husband, but
yeah.
Like, no woman should have to go through that ordeal or experience. You know, it's not good enough. COVID or not non-COVID, family needs to be allowed in. Precautions can be taken. They can be taken. But like, you know, women are left afterwards with trauma from these experiences that they're having. Now, I met some wonderful nurses and some wonderful doctors. You know, I don't want to be putting them down.
No, you're not.
But my experience was horrific. I wouldn't wish it on anyone. I wouldn't like anyone to go through that. I'm left scarred from that trauma. I have trauma from it. You know, if I see anything red, if I see blood, I have, you know, I get severe, I get anxiety, and it all comes back to me what has happened. You know, I think more needs to be done for people to have someone to sit beside them, and especially elderly people. You know, a woman there calling for water for over an hour, and no one giving her a glass of water.
For over an hour.
You know, it's not good enough, Joe. So if there was family members,
and you can still hear her voice.
I can still hear it to this day as I'm talking to Joe. I'm left scarred by it. Scarred. Like, if people were allowed in with the protocols, whether they want to put on PPE gear and masks, hands washed, and put in a room, like, at least they could look after their family members, and they know that they're being seen to, they're being brought to the toilet. They're being given their water.
Yeah.
It's simple little things like that that make the difference.
And they are, if you're bringing in somebody, as you say, it would be your partner who you've been in a bubble with, we presume, that you know what I mean, you're together, so
absolutely.
There's no, you're not bringing in a stranger from the street.
Absolutely.
You know,
and George, at my time, when I was in the hospital, we were all on complete lockdown. So me and my husband, we had been nowhere.
Yeah.
We only to the shops. But, you know, and the children weren't in school because the schools were closed.
And
you know,
Ruth, did you miscarry in the hospital?
Yes, I did, Joe.
Okay.
And the worst thing then for me was I had to stay overnight because they were concerned about the blood loss I was having.
Yeah.
So I had to stay overnight, and I was monitored, and luckily I got through the night and all was okay. But they let me home the next day, and I hadn't actually passed everything. So they told me to come back for a checkup a week later. A week later, they cancelled my appointment. And I was left at home. They were telling me to take pregnancy tests at home myself, just to make sure that the hormone level had come down to, you know, to make sure everything had passed, what had happened. So I was at home trying to do pregnancy tests for myself. I was taking my own urine myself. I had to ring my GP because I was so weak, I couldn't go up the stairs. I was out of breath because I'd lost so much blood. I didn't know what was happening. And he told me that with the blood loss, I need to just take loads and loads of fluid intakes. You know, it would take a while until I felt strong and well again. But like simple little things there, the information he was able to give me, you know, did help me along the way. But what was very depressing for me was that I have not seen a doctor since I left the hospital. I got no checkup. I wanted a checkup. I was home testing myself.
Yeah.
No one should have to go through that. No one. Luckily, I had my husband. He was able to bring me up the stairs. Mm. He was able to bring me up steak and different things to try and get my, you know, the
strength up. Yeah.
You know, yeah. And I got through it. But as I said, I'm scarred. I'm scarred from it, Joe. I really am. I'm scarred. And it's upsetting to think that people go through this and that, you know, there's elderly in hospitals and they're left on their own and family members can't come in and oversee, you know. And I know they're under pressure, the doctors and the nurses, and I'm not blaming them, but it's something does, I think, need to be done. You know, it really, really does. It's not just not good enough.
And how are you doing now, Ruth?
I'm okay, Joe. Okay. I'm okay. As I said, it's, you know, it's life. These things happen, but
the images, one of you crawling on your, I don't know, would you're on your hands and knees leaving the, coming out of the loo, to that woman screaming or calling for an hour, the plaintive cry as she, I don't know what age group the woman was, but looking for a glass of water in a hospital. And as you say, if there had been somebody with her, a relative or a friend or a partner, all of those really, really traumatic issues. Now, they won't disappear because, unfortunately, childbirth can be challenging. It's a joy. It's a joy for so many, but it can be very challenging, to say the least. And it can be heartbreaking in terms of what yourself and Marie and numerous other women have gone through.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still baffled that well, I don't presume everyone listens to Liveline in Power or whatever, but I'm still baffled that nothing has been done about this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost as if, I haven't heard this, but I've heard in another forum about Liveline and Clifton and Golfgate and all that, the hysteria, and I must say I was dismayed to read in the Supreme Court judge's transcript about Ku Klux Klan and the media and hysteria, that the only media outlet or person he named in his testimony to Susan Denham was myself. But like these are real people who contact Liveline, be it about they're upset about A, B, C, D, and the upset you're going through is on a different level to Golfgate, by the way. But so far, all your incredibly moving and honest stories and deeply traumatic stories they're heard by listeners, but they seem to be unheard by the powers that be. Maybe it'll be like the disability calls we got 4 months ago. They'll eventually be raising the doll in January or something, on a slow day. But anyway, Ruth, first of all, thank you so much for raising that again. I'm so sorry what you went through.
Thank you.
Marie, how are you now?
It's still very raw, at the minute. It's going to take a long time to try and try and get some sort of normality in my life again.
Okay.
But over time, I'm sure I'll be fine.
Well, your experiences, your lived experiences, have a right to be heard. They really have. They really have. So
It was just so traumatizing having to do it on your own, as Ruth said as well. I totally agree with her.
Okay, well, I hope that the public service both of you have done in telling of your experiences doesn't add to any of the trauma. Ruth, kind regards to you your family, and Marie, likewise. 51551, wash your hands.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Jane and Emma Carroll. Again, very, very serious issues. Jane, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And would you tell us what happened? What is your experience, Jane?
Okay, well, I had a miscarriage, or it's called a missed miscarriage, and I was offered the opportunity to have a D&C.
Okay.
So I went in on the Friday, the 22nd of May, at 8 o'clock in the morning after fasting, and went down for my D&C and came back up. My husband wasn't there to greet me because they hadn't told him that I was back up. And then I went home, and about a week later, I got a letter from the same hospital offering me an antenatal appointment.
Okay.
So it was very, very upsetting. You know, it hadn't been a planned pregnancy, but it was a great
surprise. And what you reckon your experience, what never got on the system or wasn't recorded?
Basically, I rang them and they said, oh, we're very sorry, we'll update our records. But there's no correlation between, you know, departments. I mean, like, your hospital record number is your number.
Yeah, follows you everywhere. Follows you everywhere.
Yes, it should do, per se. But for this now, there was no link in with the fact that I had been in the hospital already. And, you know, they didn't update the records. So it was very upsetting.
And when you saw that, did you recognise that the letter, the envelope, was from the hospital?
I did, yes.
Okay.
So when you opened it,
your head is in a different frame because you've had the D&C and things unfortunately hadn't gone well. But your head is in a particular frame. And then your reaction when you read a completely different letter, which presumed everything had gone, was going okay.
Yeah. Well, you see, what happened was that, you know, I was expecting it to be the bill for the bed for the day because you don't get that free, mm-hmm. even though they book you in when you go for your appointment. And see, what happened was I was 10 weeks pregnant and I had a bleed. So I rang the hospital and they said, come in. And my husband met me there and they said the usual line, I'm sorry, there's no heartbeat. Okay. So then they go through your options, which are let it happen naturally, give you a tablet to help you go on, or a D&C. So I decided the D&C would be less traumatic for me.
Right. Okay.
You know, I'd say a lot of women are the same. And so I presumed then that it would be a letter from the hospital saying that I owed for the bed. So I opened it up and couldn't believe what I was reading. I was really shocked. I was so upset. I rang my husband in floods of tears. You know, I ran the hospital afterwards and said, like, this isn't on. You know, I was so upset. You know, you don't expect something like that to happen. You know, you'd think that there'd be something on the file that would have pinged it saying, you know, don't contact this person, you know.
And I see in your initial call, you said you actually fell to the floor when you got the letter.
Yeah, I did. I was so shocked. I mean, it's horrible losing your baby as it is. You know, especially when you're so early in a pregnancy, you don't have anything tangible to say, yes, that baby did exist. And then you get something like that, you know, and you can deal with a lot of emotions when you lose a baby, you know.
Of course, of course. James.
And it wasn't my first bit, you know.
Oh, was it?
So,
okay.
Yeah, but...
Stay with us, Jane, and Emma Carroll. Emma, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Thanks for having me on.
And Emma, not only are you relating to what Jane is saying and other people are saying on this programme now over months, but you've gone a step further and you've set up an Instagram page called In Our Shoes.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell us what happened and what prompted you to set up this platform, so to speak.
Yeah, so I suppose I was pregnant at the beginning of this year. I had my gorgeous little girl in May, in April.
Congratulations.
And, you know, thank you very much, my first. Yeah. And, you know, obviously COVID was swirling in the air. Everything was so all over the place. I mean, nobody knew their heads from their tails. And we were all just kind of doing our best to get on with things, figure out the systems as we could, as everybody was, from government to hospitals, everybody. So, you know, it wasn't the best of experiences that I had in hospital at all. But look, I took it on the chin. We were in completely unprecedented times and, you know, people were doing their best. However, we're 7 months in now and about a month ago, I came across in the media that somebody had tweeted just with regards to maternity services and how they hadn't returned to normal, or there had been no news whatsoever. And I just kind of stopped and thought, is this actually still happening? I mean, we're at the stages of formulating a living with COVID plan. We've seen retail, all other social aspects open over the summer. And yet there's even, you know, other healthcare services, GPs are coming back online massively, other hospital services as well. And yet nothing has been proposed or changed for maternity at all. And the issue with it is the levels of trauma that are being caused are just horrendous. So myself, as I say, I was sitting at home with my little baby and another mother called Kira McGuane was down in Clare. I'm in Kildare myself, and we both kind of had the same idea and we're working on the same thing at different ends of the country, and then met in the middle and basically set up this platform to raise awareness of exactly what's happening to people in the maternity system. And the best way that we could think to do that was to let people tell us in their own words. So we share...
Okay, well done.
Thanks very much. So people message us in and then we share their stories anonymously. We don't identify hospitals or anything like that, and no identifying details in the stories. But people can just air exactly what's happened to them. I mean, people feel so alone as a result of what's happened. And every single message that we get in now says at the beginning, you know, thank you so much. I thought I was totally alone in this. Nobody will listen to me. So that's what we did, really.
And how are you surprised by the traffic you got on it, Emma?
In all honesty, at the beginning, I kind of thought, am I projecting my feelings of what happened to me? Yeah. You know, is this, I'm probably just an isolated case. I hope I'm an isolated case.
Oh, you're not. I can tell you that from the guidelines.
I can confirm that myself. Yeah. We've been inundated with stories, absolutely heartbreaking stories from people that have been affected. And I just want to say as well, both myself and Kira, you know, we don't expect the doors of maternity hospitals to be flung open. We don't expect healthcare staff to put themselves at risk.
Nobody does.
We're asking very simple requirements. I mean, since this has all happened, as I say, we've had no communication on maternity whatsoever. I mean, there's been no risk assessments that we can see that have been completed, none that have been shared with us at the very least. You know, we don't know, will partners ever be allowed in? What are the timeframes? What are the criteria that we need to allow people to get support that they need? We have Dr. Peter McKenna now, who is working on a set of guidelines as per the Taoiseach's instructions.
Okay.
But again, nothing. I mean, very, very scrambled details. We had confirmation from the government last week at a press meeting. Zara King from Virgin Media asked the news, you know, or asked the question, how would it work? What would the governments around it? And the HSE confirmed that each hospital would report to the HSE on the restrictions of maternity. We have it in writing from Dr. Peter McKenna that that's actually not the case. So we're not actually sure what's going on. We feel like it's being completely ignored, which it kind of has, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I agree with you.
It's not even referenced in the Living with COVID plan. I mean, this is something that it affects so many people. I mean, there are 150 babies born approximately every day in this country. Dozens of women will miscarry. Yeah. Unfortunately, people will suffer infant loss. And it's just being totally swept under the carpet. Like, and I think the problem as well is it's such a raw subject for so many people that it is so hard to voice when you've had issues with it. I mean, it's just incredibly raw for people. And that's probably why.
On average, 40 women in Ireland miscarry every day in the Republic.
Yeah. Yeah.
14,000 a year.
Yeah, exactly. And these people are totally unsupported. Yeah. I mean, they're in a system that is, I suppose we've kind of received comments as well from people saying, you know, while this has been awful that people don't have partner support, it's not exactly new to COVID either. I mean, the maternity system was slightly creaking at the seams. We know from a HICRA report in February on maternity units across Ireland that of the 75 million that should have been allocated for funding to maternity between 2016 and 2026, only 11% of that has been obtained and spent on maternity to date. So it's massively underfunded, massively understaffed, and the staff are fantastic. I mean, we're not in any way attacking the staff. They're a product of the system that they're in.
That's a given.
But I mean,
Stay with us for a second, Emma, Carol and Jane. Helen Greeny. Helen, what happened in your case? Are you there, Helen?
Oh, hi, Joe. Hi. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad, no. Thanks.
What happened in your case?
Oh, yeah. I'd just like to tell you what happened to me. Now, it's a few years ago, but I had a stillborn baby girl and full term.
Okay.
And her name was Lindsay. And I you know, when you have the baby, you're kept in for a few days.
Yeah.
She got buried on the Saturday, and I came home that day, and about 5 days later, the nurse came out to do her heel test. She didn't want the
so
this
no
thing to do. Yeah,
no joined up, no connection, no.
No,
no,
that's yeah. No, I didn't blame the nurse at the time, but she said to me that day there'll be heads roll because you know we were in an awful state, like, and when she went back, I'm sure she had a few words to say to someone, but she was only going by what she was told.
Yeah, you know? And then you say 11 months later.
Yes, I had a baby boy, Kenneth, and he was stillborn. And they were born one after another. He was 37-week baby. And about 6 months later, I got a letter out from the hospital to bring him down for his developmental checkup. Now, so, you know, it just goes to show you, like, when people aren't...
It's a connection. The lack of thinking, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it was awful. It was dreadful at the time, you know.
Yeah.
But, sure, what can you do? I hate to think that it's still happening.
Well, it is still happening now.
You know?
As we're hearing in different cases, people are saying, well, it's tough. And anyway, we won't go into the excuses.
Yeah,
but your point is that has happened before. How did you manage during COVID, Helen, yourself?
Harry, not too bad. You know, you'd miss the grandchildren. I'm a granny now.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
Okay.
And I have five of them, but we had a new baby in the pandemic. And my son and his wife had a baby, and sure, look, we couldn't see her, and nobody in the family has even met her yet, you know.
Yeah.
But they were able to come to the window and, you know, to wave it in and that kind of a thing. But I suppose the same as everyone else.
What age are the parents of the grandparents, if you follow me? Of your grandchildren?
I'm 60 now, Joe.
That's young,
when that happened to me now, I know, I was saying to the girl there, it was 1982. I was only 22 and my husband was about 24, you know. So, I you know, there was some excuse in maybe, you know, computers and that, but it's still happening now. I have two children, Joe. I have a daughter of 41. And I have a son, he's 35 next week.
And you have five grandchildren or six?
Five grandchildren.
I can't keep up with you, Helen.
Well, I only have two myself, but I have five grandchildren.
Okay. Mind yourself. Jane and Emma, thanks indeed, Jane, especially you and the difficult situation, especially when you got that letter. And as I say, you collapsed when you...
Thank you.
...the letter. And Emma, thanks indeed. I know you had a different... scenario in terms of outcome and the baby is fine, but thank you for setting up that platform as well called In Our Shoes. 51551 Marshall.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.